All righty, hour number three of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So let's get into the latest with DeAndre Hopkins. Still nothing on Dalvin Cook in terms of knowing where he's going, and still nothing on DeAndre Hopkins as well. With training camps getting closer and closer, we'll see if that intensifies throughout this week or maybe at some point next week. But you did have earlier today, I believe, or this may have been from yesterday, you did have Jeff Darlington, who's an NFL insider, made an appearance on the Rich Eisen show. And Jeff Darlington said that the Bills aren't out on DeAndre Hopkins. And Darlington said he still believes Hopkins has the spot in Buffalo if he wants it. Darlington did go on to say, quote, "My understanding with the Bills is, yeah, they love DeAndre Hopkins, and he'd be a great addition, but they're not going to pay him," Darlington said. This is via SI. "If he wants to ring chase, there's a spot for him." So most of the conversation has been Tennessee and New England. Now, it's not just because those are the teams that have been thrown out there. It's because DeAndre Hopkins' first visit was in Tennessee. His second visit was with the Patriots. So when you look at all these other teams that we're talking about, if it's a Buffalo, if it's Kansas City, if you're actually interested in DeAndre Hopkins, aren't you going to bring him in for a visit? Or is the play here, make DeAndre Hopkins' camp reach out to you? Because the longer DeAndre Hopkins waits, it just shows you that he doesn't want to go to Tennessee. He doesn't want to go and play for the Patriots. He wants to go somewhere else. But at what price? And that's the big thing here. Because as I said earlier, DeAndre Hopkins has three priorities. And I'm not saying these are in the order of the priorities. He wants to win. He wants to be the number one wide receiver. And he wants to get paid. You go to the Patriots or the Titans, you'll be the number one wide receiver. You'll get paid. But are you going to win? Right now, New England, in terms of winning in my destination a Super Bowl, does not fit that definition. And when you look at Tennessee, they're not a Super Bowl team either. So does DeAndre Hopkins say to himself, "I prioritize winning and I prioritize being the number one wide receiver over winning"? And I think he will, because I think he'll talk himself into saying, "Oh, Tennessee last year was what, like 7-3, and then they didn't win another game down the stretch. But the last few years, they've consistently been in the playoffs." And for New England, I think you'll say, "Oh, it's playing with the great Bill Belichick." I have a lot of admiration for Bill Belichick. You say you care about winning, but do you actually care about winning? And I think for DeAndre Hopkins, he would love to go to Kansas City. He would love to go to Buffalo. And in Kansas City, he'd be the number one wide receiver. I know the number one option is Travis Kelce. But from a receiving standpoint, he's the number one wide receiver. And you look at Buffalo, Stephon Diggs is referred to as the number one wide receiver there. But they have a need in Buffalo because outside of him and Gabe Davis, they don't have much in that wide receiving room. Now, you could use Dawson Knox in the pass catching game. They just drafted Dalton Kincaid, who I liked a lot, out of Utah when he was coming out of college a few months ago. So I wonder how much longer is this going to take for DeAndre Hopkins. And probably the smart play here for DeAndre Hopkins is to wait. Because you don't need to go to training camp. You'll learn the playbook enough. You'll know the route tree enough. You'll get in there in enough time. And maybe your market goes for more than just two teams. Because right now the market's only two teams. The only teams we know that visit him, you know, that he went for a visit on, is Tennessee and New England. That's it. So we could talk about Buffalo. We could talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. Until they bring him in, I shouldn't expect that he's going to go there. But what happens first day of training camp? Receiver goes down with an injury from Kansas City. Or receiver goes down from Buffalo. Then the need for DeAndre Hopkins even more. Like, I go back to, I really don't like training camp. Like, it's fun that football's back. But I have covered, this is where I'm going to bitch about getting paid to cover something. That is something where, yes, 7th grade Zach Gelb is coming to the studio tonight to kick my ass when I leave this studio at 10 p.m. Eastern. He may bring some friends over from San Francisco, though, from what I heard as well, after the whole Deebo Samuel incident. But the point that I was about to make was I have gone to training camp, and I've covered training camps. For the most part, outside of the joint practices, those are actually fun. Training camp, OTAs, mini camps, they're monotonous. It's a whole lot of fuss about a whole lot of nothing. So one thing, though, that I do take from my time, though, covering that was when the Teddy Bridgewater injury happened. And when the Teddy Bridgewater injury did happen, the Eagles going to Philadelphia had Sam Bradford and Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz was drafted second overall, as you all know, but he wasn't supposed to start year one. I remember Doug Peterson, before the Teddy Bridgewater injury, was saying, yeah, Carson Wentz may not even be active on game day. He may be the third quarterback and holding a clipboard and learning. And then, boom, the Teddy Bridgewater injury happened. Minnesota said, oh, well, we could still be a contending team. We got to go give up a first-round pick. We'll panic and go trade for Sam Bradford. That I'm not saying that will necessarily happen, but, and this would be terrible, obviously. If Stephon Diggs, I know there's been problems with him in the Bills this offseason, how many times do you see a freak injury happen in training camp? Or in preseason even? And let's say he has an ACL injury, which would be terrible. Their desire for DeAndre Hopkins, which they're a win-now team right now, is going to go from, yeah, we want him a discount to we'll do whatever it takes. We'll move the money around to get DeAndre Hopkins. So he doesn't love New England. He doesn't love Tennessee. He may eventually said that's where he wanted to be from the start, but how many times do you have a press conference and someone sits down and they go, yeah, this is where I wanted to be all from the start. Like, remember Carlos Beltran when he landed with the Mets? His agent was calling the Yankees, please, 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 take this offer. We want to go to the Yankees, like right before the press conference. And that happens all the time, right? Nick Saban, he gets up in front of reporters and coach of the Dolphins. I will not be the coach of Alabama. And then he's the coach of Alabama. So just because a player or just because a coach says something doesn't mean that it's actually true. But for DeAndre Hopkins, there's really no rush, even though the season is close, about 2 months away from the start of the season, for him to pick a spot now. But let's be real here. Money, EJ, is going to win out because we could all talk about, yeah, I want to win. Yeah, I want to win. You rather be a number one wide receiver, and you'd rather get the most targets possible for DeAndre Hopkins. That's what I think has been made clear here, where he's trying to get the best of all three, but Buffalo hasn't given him an offer that he wants, and the Chiefs said, hey, we're in the penthouse right now. Until you come down to our demands, we don't need you. We just want a Super Bowl after losing Tyreek Hill, and still no one was able to figure us out.
And I think it'd be different if you were talking about two teams that didn't have great options for as pass catchers. Like, if the Bills were a team where they were a good team, but they didn't have a number one or even a good number two, like, they would probably be a team's, okay, we'll maybe bend a little bit to what Hop wants to get him here. If you didn't have Travis Kelce over in Kansas City and the Chiefs essentially, you know, win a Super Bowl without having, like, this big-time number one wide receiver, like, maybe they would say, okay, you know what, this is a piece we really need. Like, those teams have succeeded without having a DeAndre Hopkins. So, for them, it's more of a luxury rather than necessity to having a guy like that.
So, I'm trying to do some, oh, okay, I understand the emoji analysis of this now. You know, sometimes when you see an emoji pop up and it doesn't load right away and you're like, oh yeah, what animal is that?
You get that weird question mark sometimes, too. Yeah.
So, I just saw a post via ML Football, and it was Bleacher Report, who put out, right, DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
And Bleacher Report said, Bill's open to signing D-Hop if he's willing to ring chase via Jeff Darlington. So what we were just talking about. DeAndre Hopkins has commented on it. He put two emojis of a bowl and then two emojis of poop.
Oh, there you go.
So bowl bleep. Well done by DeAndre Hopkins. Now, part of me just wants to make sure, yeah, this got to be real.
I mean, I feel like we're in the Lamar Jackson negotiation again. Remember when he was posting, you know, emojis during that whole thing? And I remember there was an episode of Maggie and Perloff. Maggie's like, what's the blue cap mean? I'm like, oh, he's trying to say that's a lie.
Yeah, no cap. Come on, Maggie. Exactly.
So yeah, I feel like we're in this situation again with now DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah. You know what the problem is with all these sites? Like you go to Bleacher Report's Instagram, they post 3,000 posts a day. How the heck am I actually going to find this DeAndre Hopkins photo?
But it's all about that engagement, baby.
Yeah, that's wild. I'm not going to touch that one because some people thought my interview with Deebo Samuel was only about the engagement. No, I was genuinely curious about how he actually thought that Deebo Samuel, if they had Brock Purdy, that they would have blown out the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, that was the whole crazy part to me with that exchange. Yeah. The only reason I asked about that and then asked about it several times is, you know, in different ways, and just listening and having a conversation with someone, that's how you do an interview. That's why I call them conversations really more so than interviews, is with the whole Deebo Samuel situation. When I heard him talk to Adam Schein, he's like, oh, we would have blown him out. We would have won by double digits. I go, I understand having confidence in your team and thinking you're going to win, but how disrespectful is that to the Eagles to then say, oh, we're going to win by double digits? The Eagles only had like three losses last year or something like that. So that's why I thought the comment was ridiculous. And then he said, you know, that's in the past. Like, so, okay, do you not still believe it? And then he said something along the lines of, yeah, but I'm not going to keep on talking about it. And then I went to the future, you know, Right. Advance the conversation, go to the future. How about the matchup this upcoming year? So that's just kind of my thoughts.
And to be honest, like, I know you talk about the engagement thing, like, it's Deebo Samuel. Like, does people really think that, oh, I'm going to get, like, yeah, you know, the top headline in all of sports media tomorrow by this Deebo Samuel interview? I mean, come on.
You know what I've learned from this? And we've had clips blow up before. People think I'm a whole lot, like, people think I am a genius. I am not a smart man. All right? I did not go to Princeton. All right? I would not go to school after 4 years and try to go get a master's degree. If you guys think I have this plan, oh, I'm going to concoct this theory up. I'm going to go out of my way to get Deebo. His people reached out to us. There's no parameters. They said 15 minutes you have him. Just make sure you get a little plug-in for the Panini company. That was it. And then you talk a bunch of football or whatever's on your mind. If you think I went into that interview saying, all right, I'm going to do X, I'm going to do Y, I'm going to do Z, and then we're going to get this viral clip and we're going to put it out there and it's going to do a million views today. You guys are giving me a lot more credit than I actually deserve. The comments that people give me on that is crazy to me, EJ.
I know, but they do that with a lot of media folks, though. They think we're all, like, you know, conniving, you know, evil, you know, swilling the hands together, being like, hoo-hoo, ha-ha, wait till we do this.
Let me tell you, I make a good living, but if I was this big genius, I would figure out a way to get out of this industry, make a killing, never have to work again, and golf 7 days a week, and then every day at 5 p.m., sit outside with my feet up at a tropical island at a pool. You know, I'm not a big cigar smoker, but screw it, for this case, smoking a cigar and drinking, you know, some tequila on the rocks. You know, come on, folks. If I was that intelligent and I knew that this was going to happen, give me a break. The guy just didn't want to answer any questions. It's amazing, though. People give me too much credit. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Apparently, there's a statute of limitations on when you could talk about the Eagles.
Like, yeah.
3 months ago, all fair game. 3 months later, no, can't talk about the Eagles anymore.
But here's where I'll give you the DeAndre Hopkins bull bleep emoji. Deebo Samuel has kept on talking about this. And also what I'll say, you would assume many 49ers fans are also Warriors fans. If, let's just say, Warriors fans had an opportunity to sit down with Bob Myers, who I know has since left the organization, even though the Jordan Poole situation happened like a year ago almost, you're not going to ask Bob Myers about that? You know, we still don't know what actually happened there. So even though it's not apples to apples, it is similar. We're just because something happened a long time ago, if you don't really ever get an answer, like we haven't really got an answer what the heck happened with the Golden State Warriors and why they didn't give an actual punishment to Draymond Green, you're not going to ask about it. In this case, it wasn't like Deebo just said it. If he just would have said this in January or February and didn't respond since then, I probably would have forgot about it. But it popped up all throughout the offseason. Right. But not only that, but other things. It wasn't that long ago. I think it was like a month and a half ago where he said the Eagles were the most hated, his most hated team. So when someone finally asks you a few questions about it and isn't one of these sycophants that, oh, I covered Deebo Samuel. He's the greatest thing ever. I got to ask him everything and it's only got to be positive. Oh, yeah. That's great. All right, if that's how you want to do media, go ahead.
And shout out to the player outlets where they have, you know, I Am Athlete, you know, all of them. But like, those guys would have asked Deebo Samuel that, he would have kicked back, relaxed, and gave them 5-10 minutes on the Eagles. Like, it's always about it's those guys love those platforms, and I think they feel like they're safe. But they end up making headlines on those things, too. Like, I think he was on I Am Athlete during the Super Bowl week when he said something about the Eagles in that same situation. Or he's talking about the cornerbacks. He's talking about how
they James Bradbury trash.
Yeah, Bradbury was trash and the Slay wasn't that good. Like, when they go with those guys, they're totally fine with saying whatever. But then when you get asked a question by a media person that's not a quote-unquote player, all of a sudden they get all in their feelings.
And here's the thing. There's a lot of athletes that I have really good relationships with that come on this show and are as honest as as honest could be. You know, and some guys, like, I had no relationship with Justin Jefferson the first time he came on this show, and we had a viral clip with Justin Jefferson because he's, you know, I'm not saying Deebo Samuel's a bad dude. I'm not saying that by any stretch. But Justin Jefferson comes on, and he's like, he'll answer anything. And there's some good with that. There's some bad with that. But, you know, I asked him something very similar at the time. You know, 4 or 5 receivers went in front of you. What do you have to say? And he's like, those receivers and those teams are all going to pay, and I'm going to be better than every one of them. And he was right. So, you know, with Deebo, you could just tell from the start, where people only see the 2-minute clip that was put out there. But from the start, I asked him about the treadmill, and we had like a laugh, and then like you follow up, and he just started giving you nothing. You know, outside, to his credit, him talking about his last season, which he's already said those things, he didn't give you anything. And that's fine. If you want to just get the paycheck from the company that's paying you to promote their product, and then not give the person interviewing you anything or not have want to have a, he didn't want to have a conversation. It's not giving me something. He didn't want to have a conversation.
Right.
And that's the thing. So if that's how you want to do it, go ahead. I have a job to do. You have a job to do. I'll do my job the way I did. I did my job great. You have your job to do. So the whole thing and just all the commentary on it, it just gets to a point where it does get stupid. But people are entitled to feel the way they do. It's the passion that, you know, is what makes sports fun. You know, 50 people will tell me I'm the greatest thing ever. 50 people will tell me that I'm a moron. But just to get back to your point, you know, I'll tell you, I've become friendly throughout the years with Channing Crowder, and I've been on the show a bunch. The interviews that he does with The Pivot are awesome.
Awesome.
Absolutely awesome.
Yep.
And we have a lot of great interviews on this show, too, with a lot of athletes that are currently in the NFL. But you look at the 2 times I've had a guest hang up on me or a PR person step in, the Aaron Donald situation. And people got on me when I asked Aaron Donald about swinging helmets at practice. What am I, not supposed to ask the guy that? It was one of the biggest stories. And for Deebo Samuel, he has made a lot of news about the Eagles. I didn't ask him to make that news. He has made a lot of news about the Eagles. So as someone that asks questions that I think listeners want to hear, I thought that was something that was interesting. And there was a bunch of other stuff, too, with Brock Purdy in that conversation and Trey Lance as well. So, you know, you're never going to please everybody. And to the people that tell me they love me, thank you. The people that tell me that hate me, fine with me. Thanks for listening. So I'll show you some love as well. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So where do you think DeAndre Hopkins ends up going? To try to get back to the way that we started this conversation before. I don't even know how we ended up getting back into the Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, situation. I mean, I think he ends up in New England. I think that's the, I think he's going to sell himself on playing under Bill Belichick and playing, you know, it's not going to be an easy road. That AFC East is an absolute beast. But I think that's what he's going to sell himself on. Like, he can go to the AFC South and play for the Titans. It's not a great division, but like, it just feels like you're going to NFL Siberia right now if you play for the Tennessee Titans at this point. I think that he wants to be in the spotlight to some degree, and going to New England, regardless of how good they are, is that he'll get his targets, he'll get his money, like you said, and I don't know. I just feel like these teams, they really wanted him, these contenders, they would be a lot hotter on him than they are right now.
So here's the difference, though. I do agree. I think he's going to wind up in New England. I've said that now for a while. But Buffalo and the Chiefs can't have the same mentality. The Chiefs deserve to say, okay, come join us and ring chase.
Right.
And if you don't want to meet our price, goodbye. We just won a Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill. We have Mahomes. We have Kelsey. We'll be fine. Buffalo has been close. But last year, Buffalo got embarrassed. With Super Bowl or bust expectations, they got embarrassed in the second round of the playoffs. Yes, you have Stephon Diggs. Yes, you have Gabe Davis. You just drafted Dalton Kincaid. You got some weapons there. We'll see if James Cook could take the next step. We all know how great Josh Allen is, the quarterback. Buffalo shouldn't leave any stone unturned. If I'm Buffalo, and I know you only have so much cap space, but how many times do you see teams move around contracts to open up cap space? I think Buffalo has to go get him. Because right now, there's a difference in the pecking order in the AFC where there is some separation where it's Kansas City and the Bengals are at the top. And then the Bills right now are still the third team, but they were locked in to one of those top three spots. The Bills, even though they're still a third spot right now in the AFC, they're not locked in.
Yeah, it's like there was a tier where they thought they were on the same tier as those other two teams. Now those other two teams have cleared them. They're their own tier, and now the Bills are with the rest of the AFC.
And the AFC only got better, and the AFC East only got better. Like, if you told me the Jets win the division this year, I wouldn't say that, but it's not crazy. If you told me the Dolphins would win the division, those are things that I kind of have given some hints on this show, that I may pick the Dolphins to win this division.
But here's the thing that why I would push back on the fact that they should go after Hop. The one thing about receivers is if they're not getting their targets and they're not getting the ball, even if you're winning, they can cause headaches. And they've had that already with their number one guy.
They've already had it with Stephon Diggs.
Right, so they're having this with their number one guy. So imagine Hop, if he comes in, if he's a number two, or if he's kind of 2A with him and Gabe Davis, and maybe they're winning games, but his numbers are not what they're supposed to be, like, then that maybe becomes his own headache.
But I thought Stephon Diggs was all about bringing in an Odell, or all about bringing in a DeAndre Hopkins. Another time where sometimes an athlete says something just to say something, and it's not actually true. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Real quickly, because I know we're up against it, I did see that Dennis Dodd released his yearly hot seat rankings, and he has a scale where if it's 5 for college football, the coach needs to win or be fired. 4, you better start improving now. 3, pressure is mounting. 2, all good for now. 1, safe and secure. And 0, untouchable. Some notable names here. The two guys that got 5s that I thought were notable, Tom Allen at Indiana. Now, remember, it wasn't that long ago there was some excitement with Indiana, and people were talking about how good of a job that he's done. But you look at it now, Michael Penix, who was never able to stay healthy at that program, is now off at Washington. And year one with Kalen DeBoer, he was healthy, and he had a Heisman-like type of season. And there's a lot of people that are picking Washington as kind of one of those surprise teams to go make the college football playoff this year. West Virginia, I know they have their own problems with Bob Huggins, where you thought he was out, and then he said he never resigned after he was just completely embarrassing, not once but twice in the span of a month. But for their football team, you bring back Neil Brown, you have a new administration come on in. You know that Neil Brown is a dead man walking. Yeah, I'd be shocked if Neil Brown is back next year for West Virginia. 4, Dino Babers. Ack, it wasn't that long ago. People were really positively talking about Dino Babers with Syracuse.
What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, that's the type of world that we live in. Jimbo Fisher in at 4. I was actually surprised here that Jimbo Fisher is in a 5. Now, here's the confusing part with Jimbo Fisher. Are you going to pay him? You're going to pay him to walk away. And that's the thing. But he has so much talent. Last year, they were embarrassing. He has so much talent this year, where you could argue from a talent standpoint, they have the 3rd or 4th most talented roster in the SEC. You know, you look at Georgia and Alabama and LSU, probably the top 3 in some order. But then right there at 4 is A&M, and you bring in Bobby Petrino. Like, you got to go find a way to have more than just a respectable season this year. But early in the week, I kind of compared Jimbo Fisher to John Gruden, where he won something all those years ago, and then ever since, he's not been the same coach.
Can I read you quickly his buyout numbers, Jimbo Fisher?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the money that they
Now, let
owe
me
them.
Just remind you, EJ.
Yes.
We're talking about SEC football people.
Okay.
People pay buyouts all the time, but
okay,
go ahead.
But this is, as they say, is different. 2023, he's fired this year, $76 million. 2024, $67 million. 2025, $58 million. 2026, $48 million. 2027, $39 million. 2028, $29 million. 2029, $18 million. And 2030, $9.9 million.
That's a whole lot of dough.
That's a lot of money. I mean, if you fire him this year, you got to pay him $76 million.
Now, you look back at Jimbo Fisher. So far at A&M, 9-4, 8-5, 9-1 was the big year in 2020, 8-4, and 5-7. So just pulling up the Texas A&M football schedule this year, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, he has to go to this record in order to come on back. I don't think, he's not winning the SEC this year. I don't even think he'll get to an SEC championship game because I just don't trust Jimbo Fisher. But the schedule this year for the Aggies of A&M, you have New Mexico, that should be a win. Then you're at Miami. That's a big year for Mario Cristobal, even in year number two. And that's right, the dream job and all he's meant to that institution. But you should be able to start the year off 2-0. Then you play Louisiana Monroe. You should be able to start the year off 3-0. Then you get into SEC play. You go up against Auburn. We'll see what they could be in year number one with Hugh Freeze. You got Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee. I like the job that Shane Beamer has done at South Carolina. You get Spencer Rattler back. You got Ole Miss, Mississippi State. You get the cupcake game in there November 18th against Abilene Christian. And then you get at LSU. So New Mexico's a win. Miami's not a lock of a win, but it should be a win. If you lose to Louisiana Monroe, goodbye. And then you have Abilene Christian. Just on the surface right there, those are four games. And I know A&M last year lost to Appalachian State. So you never know. But just there gets you to four. You have Auburn, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and LSU. You got to at least win four games there and have eight wins on the season. But anything short of that, then it's really embarrassing for Jimbo Fisher. And then I even wonder if you just get to eight, is that going to be enough to keep your job? And then you talk about the money component of it as well, EJ.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I feel like they may have a better season than last year, but the fans will still be angry because they had the best.
They should be.
They had the best recruiting class ever last season. Best recruiting class in our school history or best recruiting class in the last 10 years. Ever, according to some of these recruiting websites. And that's the team they put out on the field last year that won five games. Now, those guys in another year in the program, you would think, okay, these guys should be able to come in and be impact players. If in your second year you only win eight games, I mean, I think people are going to be calling for Jimbo's head. And then the question will be, will they be able to stave off those people and say, hey, I know eight wins isn't what you wanted, but it's not terrible, and we can't pay him $76 million, so what do you want us to do?
And you want to talk about money as well? Mel Tucker, who got a 10-year $95 million deal. We know what he did in year number one, and then year number two dropped off in a big-time way. But Mel Tucker right now has a 3 rating. ACT talks about how quickly, right, what have you done for me now? That is the definition of Mel Tucker when you just go 1 year, you're the talk of it, and then the next year, you're kind of fighting for your job. Now, you kind of forget that 2020 did happen. But yeah, he's been at Michigan State now for 3 years, but he had that big year back in 2021 where they did go 11-2. But that's when really Mel Tucker, because the 2020 year, you could kind of throw it out. But for 2021, that was like, wow, unbelievable year. And then last year, you go 5-7.
Yeah, and Michigan coming back now looking like Michigan again last year particularly. I think that puts even more of a concern. He said, okay, maybe Jimbo with Aiden Hutchinson and Ajobo, like maybe that's 1 year and we'll be able to beat them. So, like, you know, we'll be fine. And last year you see Michigan, okay, now they're a dominant force again and Michigan State falls off as much as they did. There's got to be some concern about whether or not they can stay at that level.
I will say it's not necessarily a knock on Dennis, but those are really only the names that stand out. You know, you never know what happens throughout the course of a season, but heading into this year, like really outside of Jimbo Fisher, not a lot of names that really resonate in terms of the hot seat.
Well, we had a lot of changeover last year. Florida, Miami, LSU, like a lot of big schools fired guys. So these guys are in year one, year two. Now, some of these guys may still be on the hot seat, but that
Brett
is
Venables
rare.
At Oklahoma.
Right. Oklahoma, big change. So, like, I think some of these places where you're looking for the big name coaches, a lot of those people are bringing in new guys who are trying to build programs.
Take a timeout. We come on back. We look at another CBS list. This is AFC QBs under the most pressure entering this season. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So I was reading a list today by CBS Sports, and it's the 5 quarterbacks of the AFC under the most pressure going into this 2023 season. EJ, I don't know if you have you seen this list yet? Just wondering.
I have not.
Okay. Can you try to guess who the five quarterbacks are only in the AFC under the most pressure this year?
Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is definitely on that list. Under the most pressure. Ryan Tannehill.
Hold on. Russell Wilson is on that list. He's number one.
Right.
You said Ryan Tannehill?
He might not ever be a starter if he doesn't play well this year.
Yeah, but does anyone actually care what happens with Ryan Tannehill this
year? I mean, so I took under most pressure given I'm talking about those guys individually. Now, if the list is more about just overall in terms of like how people are paying attention, then I understand. But Ryan Tannehill is playing for his career this year. That's unarguable.
Let me say this. Four out of these five names are big names.
Okay.
Somewhat big names. Like three are like really big names. You got one of them in Russell Wilson.
Okay. So then I'll throw Aaron Rodgers in there.
That would be correct. Aaron Rodgers number two.
Wow. Interesting.
So you got Russell Wilson one, Aaron Rodgers two. You got the first two right out of the gate. Who do you think is in there at number three? AFC only.
Three. Mac Jones.
Mac Jones is on the list, but he's number four.
Four. Okay, interesting.
And by the way, Mac Jones is the name that's not really a big name.
Right. And it's funny because I was wondering. I was like, he may not be the biggest name, but he was a first-round pick. So, big in my eyes.
And had a great year at Alabama.
He did.
So, you got two more here. One's a big, big
one's
name.
One's a big name.
Lamar? Nope. Not Lamar Jackson. You want me to give you the other two?
Let me get one more guess.
Okay.
Let me do Tua.
Tua is on the list.
Right.
That's a big name, but not the big, big name.
There's a big name at number five. Still
on
the list. Still on the board.
You were in a similar ballpark earlier. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Similar ballpark earlier. So I'm thinking, I was talking a lot of old guys.
Similar.
Josh Allen?
Nope. Similar ballpark as Russell Wilson.
So I'm thinking an old guy who...
Not necessarily. Two totally different people, but a similar ballpark.
That's interesting. The AFC? I'm trying to run through these quarterbacks now.
That was a big hint. Two totally different people. I'm talking off the field. But in the same ballpark.
Off the field? Who am I missing? Who gives it to me? Who is it?
Deshaun Watson.
Oh, okay.
Where Russell Wilson got traded for a king ransom, underwhelming year. Deshaun Watson got traded for a king ransom. Now he was suspended,
right,
but comes back in the final six games of the season.
He
was number three. So wow. you look at this list. Russ is number one. I'm more than fine with that ranking because if Russ then has back-to-back really bad years, I know you got to look at the money and see how you can move on, but that conversation is going to start where maybe one more year for Russell Wilson and then Sean Payton looks to go get his next quarterback with the Denver Broncos. Rodgers at two, totally understand it. Rodgers actually entering this NFL season, I would say is the biggest storyline in the sport because for the last 2 years, it's, is Rodgers going to leave? That was the last 3 years. And then now we finally got that answer. I'm not telling you I think Rodgers will win a Super Bowl this year, but I don't know what to expect here. Like, the Jets should make the playoffs, but outside of that, if you told me they just missed the playoffs this year, would I be stunned? I'm not telling you I think they will, but I wouldn't be stunned because the AFC is so loaded. So I just kind of want to see how this ends up going on out with Aaron Rodgers. And then you continue to move through this list. Deshaun Watson in at number three. Yeah. See, here's the thing with Watson. Watson still has a scapegoat, and it's Kevin Stefanski.
Really?
Russ had his scapegoat last year. Where, don't get me wrong, Russ was horrible, but people just crushed Nathaniel Hackett, and deservedly so. Deshaun Watson, yes, only six games last year. Now it's his first full season back. If he's not what he once was, then Kevin Stefanski is going to be out of a job this year. For Mac Jones, now this is how you determine pressure. Because in all likelihood, regardless of what happens this year, Russ, Rodgers, and Watson are all back on the team the following season. But for Mac Jones, there's pressure on him to play well because then that's year number three. If you then go into year number four and the team still doesn't know about you, you get into fifth-year option time and you wonder how the Patriots are going to approach that. You would think You know, most teams, you would anticipate them picking up the fifth-year option, but you never know, because look at what happened with the Giants and Daniel Jones.
And you also start to wonder about what they do in the draft, because at that point, now you're thinking, are they taking a quarterback in the first round next year, a quarterback draft next year? Next year is going to have maybe 3, 4, 5 guys get taken in the first round.
Yeah, definitely you will have Caleb Williams and Drake May, and there's going to be, I think next year is a 5-quarterback first round draft. If you already have two guys without a doubt a lock
to go 1 and 2 potentially,
you got to think it ends up being 5. And this past year, it ended up only being 3 because you had Bryce Young go 1, you had C.J. Stroud go 2, then Anthony Richardson go 4, and then if Hendon Hooker didn't get hurt, he probably would have been a first round pick. And somehow Will Levis, even though I don't think he's all that, everyone thought Will Levis was going to be a first round pick. And then at number 5, Tua. You know, it's weird because I'm a Patriot fan. I actually want Tua to do well this year, because this past year, that was scary. It was frightening what happened with Tua Tagovailoa. And I've said this, I think, like once a week for the last 4 or 5 weeks. I don't know about you, EJ, but, and it's so tough to predict, is someone going to get a concussion or not? Like, predicting injuries, you just can't do it. But every single person, because of how scary it was last year, does not think Tua Tagovailoa, and I get it, is not going to get through a season healthy. Isn't that just, I'm kind of programmed wherever everybody says one thing is definitely going to happen and they're adamant about it, that the opposite ends up happening?
Right. Yeah. It's a weird thing. It makes me wonder, like Kurt Warner, people forget that he had concussion issues. And there was a point in his career where it looked like he could never stay healthy for a season. And then he went to Arizona. Matt Leinart becomes a bust. And then
he's
in the Super Bowl. He plays two or three healthy seasons before he eventually retires. So you wonder if the offense changes, or maybe not changes, but maybe they try to protect him more. Like the one thing about Kurt Warner in Arizona with Ken Wisenhunt, it was about get the ball quick out of his hands, quick release, like accentuate his strengths. Like if Tua can't be a guy who's taking 5-7-step drops while defensive linemen are teeing off on him, like, I wonder if the Dolphins change their offense a little bit to protect him, to keep him healthy.
I actually really like this list. I think this is a solid list that was put out there by CBS Sports, where it's, and you could debate the order a little bit, but then you're nitpicking. Russell Wilson 1, Rodgers 2, Deshaun Watson 3, Mac Jones 4, and Tua Tagovailoa 5, AFC quarterbacks under the most pressure.
It's just the pressure thing, again, it's almost like it's a super subjective way to look at it. Because, again, like, I mean, Ryan Tannehill is playing for his career. Like, I don't know how you could say he's under less pressure than Aaron Rodgers, like, who's playing for essentially for his legacy, for, like, you know, adding on to a legacy that's already been written.
So you look at pressure. There's multiple ways to look at pressure. Right. You're not wrong. You're looking at pressure as who's in danger of losing their job.
Right. Like, to me, that's why Russell Wilson makes sense. That's why Mac Jones makes sense. That's why Tua makes sense, because now there's a health thing where he may not be allowed to play at a certain point. Like, with, you know, and Deshaun Watson maybe a little bit, you know, because they're, even though they can't get rid of him really with the contract, but, like, because of all the issues that happened, I understand that one. But Aaron, like, him being two, actually, I was a little surprised by, because to me, that's purely, like, it's purely, like, you know, what's the word?
Media hype?
Yeah. It's just totally, like, outside voices. It's not anything inside.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you're, we all know Rodgers going to the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Right? First ballot. But when you get into the Hall of Fame, there's different sectors, right? In terms of the way that we look at it, with the top 5 quarterbacks of all time, rings are a big tiebreaker. If Rodgers only goes to the Hall of Fame with one ring, I know this sounds crazy for a Hall of Famer and a top 10 quarterback of all time, it does seem underwhelming that he only got to one Super Bowl, only won one Super Bowl.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've killed Aaron Rodgers for his postseason blunders and the way he's played.
Now, I don't know what it is with that chair. Whoever sits in that chair, they have to hype up a quarterback in the AFC or look at a quarterback in the AFC and fall in love with the team that's in the AFC South. Hickey tells you every Colts quarterback's going to be great, and then you're bringing up Ryan Tannehill. I don't think anyone else would have brought up Ryan Tannehill under pressure.
You don't
this
think
year.
So? I mean, they drafted another quarterback after last season drafting a quarterback,
and neither of them were a first round pick, which is crazy,
right? And
Willis or Will Levis,
right? And it just feels to me like they're trying to find his replacement.
Yeah. Well, that ship has already sailed for me. Like, he's a good quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. He's solid. I wouldn't say he's good. He's a solid quarterback. You could win games with Ryan Tannehill, but in reality, he's an above average game manager. That's the way that I would kind of describe him. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with him. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we talk about this new Wilt Chamberlain docuseries with one of the directors and Chris Dillon.